Welcome to the Georgia FinTech Academy podcast. The Georgia FinTech Academy is a collaboration between Georgia's fintech industry and the University System of Georgia. This talent development initiative addresses a massive demand for fintech professionals and gives learners the specialized education experiences needed to enter the fintech sector.
Hi, everybody. This is Tommy Marshall, the Executive Director of the Georgia FinTech Academy, and I would like to welcome you, our listeners, to our inaugural podcast for the Georgia FinTech Academy. And I am super excited that I have been able to bring a couple of my good friends into our first podcast today. First, I have to introduce you to Glenn Sarvati. Hi, Glenn.
Tommy, thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being here. Glenn is with 154 Advisors. He's also a core leader of our Technology Association of Georgia FinTech Society. And I've had the great pleasure of working and getting to know Glenn over the last many years here in Atlanta. Thanks for being with us, Glenn. I really appreciate it.
I'm always happy to talk about FinTech.
That's right. Me too. Me too. And then... we also have a very special guest in Jonathan Pender, who is a senior at Georgia State University's Computer Science School. And he, congratulations, Jonathan, will be getting his Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science in May, will be graduating. And I know all of you prospective employers out there are going to be disappointed to hear that he's got a full-time job that he's already agreed to take with BlackRock, that is the largest asset manager on the planet, $7.43 trillion under management. Jonathan, they set a record last week with that, with their assets under management. Fink, their CEO, he announced that he had his, his 2019 kind of shareholder type meeting announcement. And they announced that they'd hit this massive record number of assets under management. Fantastic organization. Really excited you're heading there. And then I guess additionally, Jonathan is an entrepreneur and has created a payments company called OceanPay that we want to hear a whole lot more about. So just thanks so much for being here, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Mr. Marshall.
I want you all both to talk a little bit more about yourselves, but before we jump into that, since this is our inaugural podcast, I want to share with all of you, our listeners, what we've been thinking about in terms of format here, and you're getting a bit of it just as you hear the introductions. We're going to release a podcast monthly. Today is January the 23rd, 2020. We are on the Georgia State campus in a recording studio that they've been so generous to let us take advantage of. And so we're going to do a podcast monthly, and the format's going to have a basic similarity every month. And that's going to, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on whether you like me or not, I'm the moderator as the executive director of the Georgia FinTech Academy. And then I'll be inviting an executive from the FinTech ecosystem, either here in Atlanta, here regionally, nationally, globally. We have a capability to bring in folks from really anywhere in the world through the technology that's available to us. So there'll be an executive present in every podcast. And then to have a student come in from the Georgia FinTech Academy and really just have some rich dialogue between someone who's an executive, you know, out there on the front lines, building a business, growing a business, advising business from a fintech standpoint, and then be able to bring that perspective of the student who's been learning about fintech and certainly in Jonathan's case is living fintech in his OceanPay company that he's been building. And my hope is that these will be really rich and unique sets of dialogue that will be interesting to students. They'll be interesting to industry participants and others. So that's the direction we're heading in. So, Glenn, can you just take a few minutes and just tell us a little bit more about you and why you know, what brought you here today? Appreciate it.
Sure. So you know, I think that kind of my trajectory in the fintech space here in Atlanta really mirrors the industry as a whole. I've been in Atlanta now for 25 years, and I'd say in the fintech space for about 22 of those. And I cut my teeth in the payments and fintech space, specifically with a company called CheckFree, which is one of the core players within the Atlanta marketplace and the Georgia marketplace, and really a pioneer in online banking and bill payment in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Pete Kite,
actually, he just came up in another conversation I had this morning, mm-hmm. and they had relocated down. They had acquired a company from the banking software and services space here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Had already gone public. They were based up in Dublin, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, and during the integration process, just realized exactly what was going on down here in Atlanta in this space, decided to move the headquarters down here and build out a management team. That's when I joined in there.
When was that?
That was, they went public in 96, I believe.
Yeah.
I might be off by a year, and then within a year, they were down here as the headquarters.
And so let's ask Jonathan a question.
All right.
Jonathan, how do you pay your bills? Your electric bill, Georgia Power bill, how do you pay it?
Online.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Do you it every month separately, or do you have it on auto pay?
You're putting me in a bad spot here, because I actually live in a dorm, so I don't pay those
Okay,
bills.
Good question. Yeah. All right, good. All right. Okay, Glenn, let's rethink this. What about like your mobile phone bill?
Oh, online.
Yeah, okay.
I just, put in my credit card information. I'll have a recurring purchase with
Verizon.
Yep.
So that's
they'll send you the bill, and then it'll just automatically
come. I don't even see it come.
So that's like more of a biller direct.
Exactly.
What we used to call it. I'm trying to figure out a bill that you pay using CheckFree. That's where I was heading. So Jonathan, next question. Yep. In your bank experience. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to the site where I'll say like pay a bill?
No.
Really? This is interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't pay any bills like that. Even for my student bill, I just set up automatic deductions and I never see it happen.
And it hits against your credit card, your debit card.
I put it against my debit card.
See, now Pete Kite, I hope you're going to listen to this podcast. I want you to listen, Pete, every month. This is kind of interesting, right? Because CheckFree, how it kind of started when CheckFree started was very much you'd go to your bank site and they'd have a list of billers that you would choose from. And so you'd see Georgia Power, you'd see AT&T, Verizon, et cetera, the gas company. And then you'd kind of enroll them as, okay, I'm their client, I'm their biller. You put in your account number and then you would just enter every month. You get either the bill would be electronically presented to you in your bank, in your bank app, or you would just say, "Oh, I know I need to pay this bill." This is what I do now,
right. And proactively,
and you'd enter it in and hit the pay. But it's all branded as your bank, but the entire service would be enabled by CheckFree.
That's the key. I mean, that's I think really fundamental to a lot of what's going on in the fintech space overall, specifically in Atlanta, it was a white label model. And I will say was, because now CheckFree's been acquired by a company called Fiserv,
which is
also still a very big player here in Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, the idea was the vast majority of people had no idea they were using CheckFree. Mm-hmm. They were using Bank of America. They were using SunTrust. Right. They were using Wells. And that was the power behind that online banking opportunity and presence online for each of those banks.
And then I guess for all of you that are listeners, you should know that Jonathan is a Gen Z member. We have a live one. we have a live one with us right here. Here he is. I think you're actually the oldest of the Gen Z. You're the very front of the Gen Z kind of wave that's coming. And I mention that mainly because in a lot of the industry conversations that I find myself in almost daily, there is an intense desire to try to figure out how to address Gen Z appropriately with financial services, capabilities, products, delivery. I mean, it's a big open question, and it's one that has the financial institutions and the fintech players all very, concerned. I guess concern is the right word. Because you're, you know, when you were, how soon from the date you were born, how long was it from the date you were born until you interacted with a mobile device?
I'd probably say at about 6 or 7.
Wow.
That's bad. That's late.
That's pretty late. And I back then, I don't think it was the smartphones. It was more of like those hard Nokia phones.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I remember my youngest daughter is 17, and I remember that conversation at the kitchen table. I don't know how old she was. Can we talk about my first mobile phone? I want to know.
Right.
And I loved it. And we said, well, what do you mean? She goes, how many apps do you think it should have? Like, that's just a conversation I did not expect to be having with a 5-year-old.
My point, this whole, you know, Gen Z, and again, like, you're the oldest of the Gen Z, like, you're the beginning of the wave. So I'd say, you know, folks that were born maybe 3 or 4 years after you, they were probably on an iPad when they were two years old. Doing stuff. And the point is like completely mobile first, you know, geared in a totally different way, you know, grown up with YouTube, Instagram, Spotify, et cetera, you know, all these different types of media engagement points.
And having said all that, I'll be very interested. We should have Jonathan back on the show.
Yeah.
You know, after, you know, July, August, when you've, you know, started your job at BlackRock, you're getting a nice paycheck, you've got your own apartment. It'll be interesting because I think that's a pretty major change in a life event where a whole series of new bills wind up being things that you need to pay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it is realistic to think that given that you've kind of grown up with different expectations, you're probably going to choose to pay them in a different way, but it'll still be a new experience compared to what you've done up until now. So I'll be really curious when it comes to the gas bill.
Well, Glenn, I took us on a little bit of a check-free tangent there, but so, you know, I know you had a meaningful role there at Check-Free.
I was divisional CFO of the e-commerce unit. I did business development, worked with a bunch of their acquisitions, left about a year before they were acquired by Fiserv, spent some time as a subject matter expert in the payment space with McKinsey and Company, who ironically their offices are moving into the same building where BlackRock is going here on near Pond City Market. And I've been doing my own thing now for about 5 years, working with smaller financial institutions, both banks and credit unions, helping them kind of navigate the financial technology landscape and understand how they can, you know, leverage a lot of these opportunities out there from third-party vendors or doing things in terms of in-house development and how they can bring that to market to solve the Gen Z problem and the millennial problem and everything else as far as making sure that they've got the best services out there that speak to the needs of their client base.
Right. And then in my view, you've been instrumental in helping us really kind of be organized as a fintech ecosystem here in Atlanta.
I'm a data guy. I mean, I just from a kind of historian standpoint and just kind of understanding the space, we've spent a good bit of energy and it's out there readily available to everybody. GeorgiaFintech.org is the website. Mm-hmm. We've got a map of all the companies that we see in the space and here in Georgia. And it's amazing how, you know, despite the fact that we've got, you know, a whole bunch of people, it's a very crowdsourced initiative. It's nothing that we've hired out or anything like that. We continue to find companies that, as I say, are hiding in plain sight that are part of the ecosystem that we didn't necessarily know about. And we continue to add to this list all the time. Right now, we are showing 165 companies in the Metro Atlanta and the Georgia space, the vast majority being in Metro Atlanta.
Right.
132 of them are private, 33 are public, employing nearly 40,000 FTE. Mm-hmm. Another interesting statistic that Savills put together for us a while back, originally, they found that we had about 8% of all of the Metro Atlanta real estate, commercial real estate space was attributable to fintech companies. Just got that refreshed, worked with some of our colleagues at Cressa. It's now bumping up against 10%. It continues to grow, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't sound really big relative right. to a very large market.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenal.
I mean, you got to remember that's 10% of a corporate real estate market that includes Home Depot's headquarters, Coca-Cola's UPS, headquarters, UPS's yeah. headquarters, Mercedes-Benz of America, Porsche. I mean, that are, you know, huge. All huge companies, of course. That kind of helps me put it in perspective a little bit.
Yeah, and the thing that I like, that I really like, is just the wide variety of companies that are involved in this ecosystem. And we've got the big name firms, you know, Fiserv, we just mentioned, acquired CheckFree, FIS, Global Payments. Those are all companies that have made major acquisitions.
And FIS, by the way, is our founding investor member of the Georgia FinTech Academy. Just stepped in on day one and made a really meaningful commitment to help us financially, but also from just helping us engage with their organization in multiple ways. And so it's just, that's been a fantastic relationship.
Kind of the pay it forward approach of making sure that you're always, and you know, we mentioned Pete Kite already. I know he's now involved, they're not a Georgia-centric company, but he's now involved in a new company called Bilgo, that kind of the model that, again, the Gen Z that you were talking about, Jonathan, that they're pursuing something that more works toward moving some of those transactions toward cards. But then you've got, you know, a company like Intercontinental Exchange, which really flies below the radar here, but it's clearly a fintech company, operates the New York Stock Exchange, and then also does new things like Bakkt, the cryptocurrency unit. So they're a very big player that really is not looking for headlines.
I love reminding all my friends in New York that the New York Stock Exchange is owned and run by an Atlanta company.
And then you've got, you know, smaller companies that might not be household names, but very active and dynamic. Patient Co. for healthcare payments, BitPay again on the on the cryptocurrency and
the first cryptocurrency Bitcoin merchant acquirer.
Yes. Cabbage, Cardlytics, a couple of the kind of high flyers that have grown off from the startup stage here in Atlanta. Cardlytics has gone public. Cabbage is still, you know, a very, very prominent player in the small business lending side. Greenlight, working toward financial literacy and inclusion in the smaller group. Again, the list goes on and on. And that's what I find so interesting is it runs the gamut of different things. And then, you know, opportunities like BlackRock, who, again, are not a Georgia-headquartered company, but saw how important it was to be here and brought their innovation hub down here. And Jonathan, I'm assuming that's the piece that you're kind of plugging into here. And I'm dying to hear more about that because I think that that's, you know, the types of opportunities that really kind of, you know, get the juices flowing in terms of where people can envision a future as they go into the fintech space. Because it's not a natural, I don't think anybody grows up saying, I want to get involved in fintech.
Jonathan did.
That's what you did a startup before you left to college. I think that qualifies.
Absolutely. So I think what really got me into the space was my sophomore year. I took a internship at NCR and I was like, there's something interesting about this fintech stuff. And then going into my junior year, I decided I needed to get an internship in fintech. Applied to a lot of places, but I applied to this place called BlackRock. I had no idea about it, what it was. I remember when I got the super date, I told my buddies who work in finance, like, this is the company that I'm interning at. And everyone was like, wow, BlackRock, this is a big deal. I said, all right, maybe it's time for me to understand a lot about what this is. I ended up getting an internship in their New York office this past summer. And I think what really attracted me to fintech and BlackRock in general was the idea that it's working towards a larger goal. So for BlackRock, they're very much, at the time, they were talking about, you know, sustainability in terms of investing, which they're doing a lot.
Huge announcement last week in that regard around really bringing questions around climate control into the entire risk framework of how they think about and measure risk across all the assets that they're managing. I mean, that was a kind of a shook the ground a bit when they made that announcement last week.
And I think they're one of the pioneers in ESG investing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's not so much about, you know, how can we get money out of everything, but how can we look sustainably about investing? But I think that was definitely the catalyst that got me into that. Then at the end of it, I was fortunate enough to be offered a return offer. And I said, you know, which way would I like to go? Back to New York, San Francisco, or Atlanta? And I heard the idea about the innovation hub. I was sold on it. Some other people who were in the office sold me on the idea, and I said, Atlanta is the place to be, and that's how I ended up
here. They gave you the option? You could have gone to any of those three? Wow, that's interesting. Yep. And they were basically positioning Atlanta as this. Can you say a bit about this, the innovation hub that they're putting together down here?
Not too much. I don't want to talk about it, but it BlackRock, I mean, the Atlanta office is definitely going to be the innovation hub down here in Atlanta. And they're attracting a lot of young talent. They're doing a lot in the schools. I think that the companies that tend to do well, at least in the Atlanta area, with my experience being a student here, are the companies that take the initiative to come and meet the students, meet and greets.
Yeah.
This is what our company offers. Bring them into their office. And they've been doing a lot of work now. I think 2 years ago, if you asked students in Georgia State or around the metro Atlanta area what BlackRock was, maybe 5% of them could tell you. You ask them now, it's now a buzzword on campus. You say BlackRock, everyone knows.
Which is amazing. I mean, they just came into the market just a little, like 13 months ago. I mean, this isn't, it's not like they've been here for years and years. It's been a very new entry strategy. And in fact, they just moved into their new permanent office over on Ponce, right behind Ponce City Market.
That's probably a statement about BlackRock as well as today's students. I don't think I knew who BlackRock was until I was probably 35 years old.
Yeah.
And you know it very well. Now, I'm curious, your startup company, OceanPay, did you start that before these NCR and BlackRock internships, or is that what kind of got the wheels turning that gave you the idea?
That's definitely what got the wheels turning. I think that was a big part of it, the experience, but also growing up in the Bahamas, I had an exposure to what financial services was, what payments was. Mm-hmm. And I think it really frustrated me, especially after my first year. I came to the U.S. I could use my card everywhere. I could use Cash App or Venmo to just send money to friends. Mm-hmm. Then when I went home, I was forced to carry around my card and some cash because a lot of merchants didn't accept card, or they only accepted cash. That was a big issue for me. Or I would go in to visit the banks and I would be forced to stand on lines for like 20 minutes or so. If it was a bad day, maybe up to an hour. And I was like, this is not the experience that I have in America. Why can't the Bahamas be innovating and moving forward in terms of financial services? And it was just an itch that I had to scratch, and I started working on it.
It's great to see a need like that and jump in. I can remember going way back in time. I got a letter from someone, a letter literally in the mail on paper from someone in the Bahamas saying, we've heard about what CheckFree is doing. We could really use that here. Could you come down and talk to us? And quite honestly, we were a small enough company at that point that we had other for it to sound negative, bigger fish to fry, bigger opportunities that we didn't have the bandwidth to go after that. It's interesting to hear, A, that same problem still persists in the Bahamas, and B, that somebody like you is taking the bull by the horns and actually trying to solve it is great.
Yeah, and there's really meaningful market opportunities there. In my prior life, when I was a consultant, financial services management consultant, one of my big clients was in the Dominican. And they had built an entire electronic payments capability that they were beginning to roll out across the Dominican Republic. And in some ways, it was more advanced than what I had clients doing in the U.S., and then they were finding expansion opportunities into like Panama. They were looking at the Bahamas, the whole Caribbean zone overall, which was a big wake up for me in terms of all the various different business opportunities in that region.
It's that same kind of necessity, the mother of invention thing. I mean, one of the big buzzwords for a long time now in the payment space has been M-Pesa.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there was such a massive need, both because people were underbanked, bank access to banking services. So let's just reinvent the wheel and go back and actually do it by the cell phone. And, one of those things where I think of it very similarly to the fact that the U.S. was kind of slow to the game on mobile phones because our landlines worked pretty well. And a lot of other parts of the world, they didn't. So there was a much greater incentive to move forward. Right. I think you can make that same argument in some of the ways that, you got the jumpstart on us in terms of banking, because we did have a good, solid banking infrastructure. And now people have come up with new ways to approach these same problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me talk a little bit about the Georgia FinTech Academy. I joined this initiative recently, about 3 months ago, as the first executive director. The initiative began in the fall of 2018, with really some just great leadership from the Robinson School of Business at Georgia State, and really looking to build and started out with curriculum development. So let's create five fintech courses was the vision, and let's get those out to Georgia State students with the intention of then figuring a way and working towards a way of offering those courses throughout the entire university system of Georgia. And if you didn't know, the university system of Georgia is massive. It's 330,000 students across 26 institutions. So really, you know, just a tremendous asset for us in the state of Georgia. And so these five courses were offered initially in the fall 2018. So we're into what is right now. We just closed drop ad for the spring semester. So this will be the fourth semester now that the five FinTech Academy courses have been offered. And I can tell you, because I just got the enrollment report last night, we have 409 students in Georgia FinTech Academy courses this semester.
That's across how many of those different campuses? And
65% of those students are Georgia State. After Georgia State is UGA, then Albany State, Columbus State, and Kennesaw State. And then there's a few and a lot of the other schools, but
it's
you get a sense
out
of the concept. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because this is the first semester where any student across the university system can enroll into a FinTech Academy course. There's this great capability that the university system overall has called eCampus, which allows for enrollment in courses like this to occur from any of the campuses that exist in the university system. So it's just a phenomenal resource. So the curriculum has been, I'd say, our kind of shining light, and it's where we've advanced the furthest in terms of this FinTech Academy initiative. The next big step we're taking is building professional education courses. So these will be courses like Glenn that would hopefully be useful to like kind of older guys like me and you and older people that are in their careers, are looking to either kind of move towards financial services technology, or they need some refreshers, or we have so much landscape to cover, are looking to just improve their knowledge and understanding of the industry. And so we're building courses with Georgia Tech, and we're including engagement from professors from multiple schools, including Georgia State, including Kennesaw State. And then we're aiming to be able to release our first kind of meaningful catalog of professional ed courses the summer of 2020. Georgia Tech's working with me to be able to move or use some of their existing cybersecurity professional ed courses, hopefully as early as next month, as part of our catalog. So that's an important part of the development of the FinTech Academy. And then another critical pillar that Jonathan's experienced a little bit is this: how can we help all of these 165 companies you just talked about, Glenn, get access and really engage with students like Jonathan, and really take advantage of just this great set of students that we have across the entire system. And so we're working hard as the FinTech Academy to just have great relationships with all the career advancement teams at Georgia State, at Georgia Tech, at UGA, at Columbus, at Albany State, you know, at all the schools, and really just try to have our finger on the pulse of where those set of students that are really wanting to engage with the FinTech industry and are looking for those opportunities for engagement, whether it's student projects, whether it's internships, whether it's longer term internships that sometimes we'll call apprenticeships, and full-time jobs. And, you know, really that is probably the most important metric for us as the FinTech Academy, is like, how many of those types of opportunities are we helping students realize? And we're able to address then a measured, there's been a measured demand of between six and eight, a demand for 6,000 to 8,000 FinTech professionals a year just in Georgia.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, that's one of the challenges. As I know, we've heard this from the industry for some time. The challenge is finding enough trained individuals. There are jobs. These are very good jobs, and there aren't enough people right now equipped to take them. We're not just talking programmers and coders. It goes much more broadly than that.
That's right.
And people have the understanding of this space. And, you know, frankly, you know, we all know the tech jobs, you know, tech talents are, you know, in high demand right now. So, you know, if you leave college with a programming degree, you're going to find a job. It may not be in fintech, but there's an added layer of information that, I mean, one of the keys is, you know, if someone's got the raw materials, you can still come in and train them, as you said, about the professional development or whatnot. But if people have the understanding of the fintech space, clearly you're going to hit the ground running even better and be much more equipped for a series of jobs that exist today and are projected to continue to grow for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
And if I could interject for a second, when we talk about the raw materials to succeed in financial services, as someone who's taken one of the fintech courses during the spring of 19, I took one with Dr. Yang, one of the intro to fintech courses. And I think the difference between a lot of those courses and other courses you may take is you're not reading information that's 10 and 20 years old. You're reading the newest information, what's new in the fintech space, but you're more challenged to create projects to work on new and innovative technologies. So we worked on a blockchain project for my team in the group, but there were also other companies in Atlanta that would come into the class and say, you know, this is an issue that we're having, take it and run with it. And let's work with you routinely throughout the semester and let's see how we can get something tangible at the end. And I think that it benefits not only the students with having some tangible product experience under what they're working on, but more interestingly, it lets companies know that these students, they took the initiative to get this done. They're probably a bit more seasoned. This is probably the talent that we want to pick out for them. So I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship from both ends, whether it's companies, students, or even universities.
I think that's absolutely right. And I also assume that not only is there the project-based learning, but I'm guessing a lot of guest speakers coming in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm not aware if there is a fintech textbook, it's going to be obsolete
really fast
because things move so fast. By definition, you have to always be, you know, reaching out to people.
Glenn, we did for the Fintech Foundations course, which is the similar, I think, to the course you took, Jonathan, that's kind of more a survey of fintech. So we did Jonathan Godby is the professor of that, and he asked us to help him really get connected with leaders, fintech leaders, here in Atlanta. And so we did, like, I did a bit of an all call out to about 20 folks, of which you were one.
Yeah, I did one of the videos with him.
And he did those video sessions. And it was just a remarkable response from the industry experts to be willing to come forward. And then we got, I think, 15 different video segments that are now incorporated into the curriculum of Fintech Foundations. And we realized we're going to need to go back to those folks. We're going to need to add additional folks, refresh, because there's just so much quick movement in the space. I did want to just call out as well that just the names of the courses. So because to me, this helps to get a better sense of, okay, what actually are you teaching? So there's this Foundations of Fintech, and there's nothing like a course number for it to really hit home. FTA 4001.
Got it.
When I say that, you're like, okay, this is legit. This is real. That's a catalog number, right? Then there's Financial Technologies is the other course that's taught by John Martin, which is all, it's kind of, that one's survey-like too, but it starts from a techie place. So like cloud, AI, blockchain emerging, certain encryption kind of conversations, but then talking about the application of that technology in the financial services. Banking and fintech, which is very kind of broad, but banking focused. So deposit taking, lending, all the financial technology support for that. Some of the like Revolut, these neobanks that are coming out now are, I think, a big part of that course and conversation. Introduction to financial data analytics.
Another key area.
Key area.
Just fintech, but
and by the way, of the 409 students that we have right now in the classroom, 55 are in that course. That's the most popular.
Not surprised.
Right now. And then the last one is introduction to information security for fintech, another massively critical issue.
Now, are there prerequisites for these? Do they build on one another? Are there prerequisites from other non-fintech courses? How does it kind of play out that way?
Not right now. Any of these can be stepped into without a prerequisite. There is a certificate construct. So if you take three of these five that I mentioned and do some experiential kind of project-based work, then you get a certificate on your transcript. You're noted as having a certificate in fintech, which of course helps with the resume and whatnot to be able to call that out. So that's, I think, a nice kind of way that the courses are. And then we're adding to these courses. We have a curriculum review committee that's fintech specific. We have a great proposal we're looking at right now from Kennesaw State that's around digital payments, very focused on digital payments. Valdosta State's got some meaningful work they're getting ready to roll out. And there's quite a few others in development. So we're excited about that.
And that's separate and apart from the professional, you know, the continuing.
Correct. Completely separate. Completely. Those courses are in development and will have some certain components we'll draw from these existing courses we've built. But, you know, really, we've been spending a lot of time listening to the industry and where the needs are from a professional development standpoint to inform what we're going to build those courses around.
And I'm willing to bet the syllabus on those, none of them are going to stand still for very long.
No.
Because there's always so much new stuff going on.
No, that's right. It's exactly right. Well, I wanted to talk about Visa and Plaid, which was the big announcement of the past week. Visa bought Plaid for $5.3 billion.
And for those of you who are not familiar, Plaid, again, one of these companies that is clearly a tech unicorn, but not a household name because it tends to work behind the scenes in terms of the whole notion of APIs and making it easier for data sharing between financial institutions and these fintech companies to provide new, you know, go-to-market services for the broader population, both businesses and consumers. And the fact that Visa has now given it that kind of a vote of confidence of the level of $5.3 billion is a big deal.
That's a very big deal.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, when they first think about the Visa Plaid deal, they see the name Visa and they think payments. This must be a move in payments. Mm-hmm. But I think that it would be interesting for us to talk about, is this necessarily a move in payments or is this a big move by Visa in terms of data? Yeah. Because Plaid not only services companies like Venmo, but it also services Betterment, Wealthfront. There are a lot of other robo-advisors, wealth management people in that space.
Yes.
And Plaid.
No. And I mean, I my initial interaction with Plaid was on behalf of some of the largest banks in the country that were engaging with Plaid 5 years ago, really to address what had been a persistent problem of companies like Mint, like Personal Finance, et cetera, screen scraping, what they call screen scraping, consumer financial information off the website to gather and aggregate the consumer's information. I mean, with the consumer's permission, they're doing the screen scraping. There's nothing nefarious was going on there. But it was still unsecure. And what Plaid was able to offer right out of the gate to even the largest institutions was a way for that data aggregation, which was typically balance information, to be done in a much, much more secure fashion. And I think because they kind of figured out a way to do that effectively, really put some horsepower behind the growth of that business. And then, of course, they were selling to the Venmos and the PayPals and helping with similar types of data queries to make sure, if I'm Venmo and I'm getting a request to draw X amount from your debit card, making sure the money's there before I go put the ACH request in to draw the money over.
But Jonathan, I think you hit it right on the head, the whole notion of data, because the payment itself, the actual moving of the money is very important. But one of the reasons we've seen so much activity in the payment space is the data that rides along with it and the richness of the insights that brings. So I think you're exactly right that, you know, to some extent, payments itself at the very fundamental level can become commoditized.
But that's right.
The pieces of information that come along with it carry far, far greater implications, which is why you see companies, you know, like Google and Facebook getting involved in this space.
That's right. I would love to talk about this more, but we have we've run out of time. So, Jonathan, just thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to having you as an alumna of the Georgia FinTech Academy. I'm so glad you're going to be here in Atlanta, right down the street at BlockRock, and I'm really excited. And we anything we can do to support you as you move into your career from the Georgia FinTech Academy, we are absolutely ready to help you. And then Glenn,
I want to hear more about OceanPay too. I'm probably not going to let you leave the room until we have.
You had some good questions for me. You know, a couple of last time we were together about, and he's got, I think, answers to some of your questions around the challenges you're looking to address with OceanPay. And then Glenn, as always, I'll probably see you early next week. It's wonderful spending time with you. Thanks for being here.
I love talking fintech.
So until next time, we'll have our next podcast coming out in another month. Again, you can reach us on Spotify and iTunes, and also stay abreast of what's happening with the Georgia FinTech Academy at georgiafintechacademy.org. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Georgia FinTech Academy podcasts are available on iTunes and Spotify. To obtain additional information about the Georgia FinTech Academy, please visit our website at georgiafintechacademy.org.